This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Good afternoon. Well, 5 minutes into the afternoon. Good noon, Melbourne. This is Detours on Joy 94.9. I'm Mark. Greg can't join us today. Unfortunately, he's got a hairdressing appointment, so he'll be in later on today. But we do have a very interesting guest, and today we have Lucy Holdsworth. Lucy has done many a thing in her short life, and one of the most interesting things that she's going to talk about today, of a lot of interesting things, is some filming work she's doing with Amnesty International. And you can get involved, and that's the exciting thing. We've already put up the contact details on the Detours page on Facebook, so you can go and check it out. But if you're interested as you listen through, it's easy to find out how, or we're inviting you to SMS on 0427 Joy 949, or email on air at joy.org.au and ask questions about how you can get involved, or what the filming is about. We'll go through more of those details, but get excited, reach out to us or reach out to Lucy, and you can be a part of this very exciting program. So let's welcome Lucy. Lucy, hello. Oh, there you are. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Here I am.
Welcome to Detours on Joy 94.9.
Thank
Lucy.
You very much.
We've got a lot of exciting things to talk about, but let's go to the beginning.
Okay.
Let's go right to the start of things, because you've got quite a fascinating career that you've worked across media, you've worked across the technical side, and you've been front of house. You've done a lot of different things. You've done modelling.
Yeah, that's probably my least proud accomplishment, but there was a bit of that.
Yeah?
Yeah?
So you've done a lot of different things. So you've been back of house, front of house, you've produced, you've filmed, you've got technical skills.
Yep, packed it in.
Packed it in, and you're very young. So how do you start in all this kind of thing? Take us right to the beginning of your career.
Okay.
How can listeners get involved in things that you're doing?
Sure.
And how can they learn from how you've succeeded?
Well, I've kind of gone round and round the houses, and there was never really a plan, to be honest. I feel quite lucky, blessed, fortunate, in the right place at the right time. But I started by studying journalism at university in London, which
right.
is where I'm from, or a town called Reading, but no one's really heard of that.
Oh, people have heard of the Reading Festival.
Oh, Reading Festival.
Oh, yeah.
I know. I love it. Fond memories.
Yeah, and gumboots.
And gumboots.
Wellington, sorry.
Lots of mud. So I started studying journalism at London Institute, and then I started to work for Cosmopolitan magazine. So that was my sort of press education. And then I moved from there into television production, because there was a TV program on in the UK called Model Behaviour, and it was like a model search. And my editor at Cosmo magazine was on the panel of judges. So
is this an early...
this was donkeys years ago. This
what's that thing with... RuPaul's Drag Race or...
Yeah.
No, what's the other one?
Heidi Klum and whatever.
Yeah.
There's been a million spin-offs
fashion,
around the world. But
yeah, something.
Yeah, trying to find the next big thing in modelling.
Okay.
And
was this one of the first shows is what I'm trying to get at?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So that was a pilot to what's become a very big thing in the media or popular media.
Yeah, but like I say, this was going back quite a few years now. I'm not sure if it was the first of its kind, but it was that general theme. Yeah. And so I helped my editor put that together, and it was my first introduction into television production, and realised that I loved it and kind of preferred it more to Cosmo was fantastic, but I'm not that bothered about fashion, etc. And getting my hands dirty in TV production seemed to be much more my cup of tea.
Okay, now tell the listeners, and I've already let the cat out of the bag doing our promo with our friends at Saturday Magazine, but tell us about the famous show on the famous channel.
The Bill.
Yes, The Bill.
It's quite loved over here, isn't it?
It is.
Because I used to work on EastEnders as well, but that doesn't seem
EastEnders
to be such
EastEnders is fantastic.
Oh, good. I'm glad you approve. The Bill sadly is finished now, which is terribly sad, because it was a bit of an institution in the UK and went on for... I grew up on it. and it was so much fun to work on. The cast and the crew were quite a family, really. The hours that we worked and night shoots, etc. We sort of worked hard, play hard. So it was a wonderful few years in my life, and freelance between that and EastEnders, and made music videos and as an art director. So I was helping to design the sets and do the props and continuity and all that kind of jazz.
Making sure that the flower pots are filled with the same flowers in each scene.
Yes. Things that at the time seem incredibly important, but in hindsight weren't important at all. Unless you dedicated following every frame of the show.
But the bill is like shows like Prisoner, that years after it stopped being screened,
yeah,
will still be watched and loved and adored. And,
yeah,
and
I think so.
Yeah, so what a thing to have experienced.
It was amazing. I can't say enough about it. I had an incredible time, and I went from being an art department assistant up to an art director. So they trained me up, and yeah, like I say, it was a family.
But not only train you up, it's the BBC who's doing that. Was the production company done in house at BBC, or is it an outside production company for the BBC?
The bill wasn't the BBC. The bill was Fremantle Media, so right. That was going on to ITV in the UK. I don't know right. Which channel screens it here. But then, so I left to go to EastEnders, and that was the BBC.
That was BBC.
Yes.
Well, BBC is such a phenomenal institution for anybody who's involved in media, because in the UK, it touches web, it touches radio, it touches television,
yeah,
film.
It's massive.
It's massive, and it is such a well-respected and loved cultural and social institution, and it is a institution that people rely on for independent and informed
sure.
news.
Sure.
And to go through that system, you must have learned incredible skills and from incredible people. Tell us about what
absolutely.
You learned.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing about it was, to be quite honest, my first few episodes that I filmed were quite terrifying, because it's not the kind of job where if you're sick, you don't come in. If you don't come in, then the show's not made, and there's a crew of 40 people all pulling together. So, and the turnover to try and get the episodes out, it's really tight. And one mistake that you make means that you've got to stop, start again. So the pressure was, and I was pretty young, so the pressure was phenomenal. But as a result of that, they're all very supportive, and you do some of my mentors they were very patient and lenient, and it was a wonderful education. And for anyone that wants to get into TV production, I think how I first did it was I came over to Fox Studios in Sydney.
Yeah.
And I, this is when they were making quite a few films there. They were doing Matrix 2 and 3. And I snuck in and knocked on all the doors and all the production houses in Fox and said, give me a job. And as I was being escorted out of the building by security, one producer said, oh, she's got gumption, or words to that effect, give her a job. So they gave me a job as a runner.
All right. Hold on to that thought. We'll talk about it in a minute. We're going to hear more about you running around Sydney getting work.
Okay.
Become a Joy member so we can give you the best shows every day.
The world's most uplifting station.
Call 1-300-JOY-949.
Joy 94.9.
The perfect mix of music, news and interviews. Joy 94.9.
So we were doing a bit of rapping there. So Lucy, you came from the UK,
yep.
Lobbed up in Sydney.
Yep.
And just before we go into some music we're about to put on here on Detours, Joy 94.9, we have some South American music. So
yes.
Australia, UK, give us a little bit of the spirit of why we're listening to this next funky track.
Yeah, okay. Well, I decided to toddle off to Mexico with a month's notice, handed in my contract on the bill I think I was working, and ended up in a jungle in Mexico teaching English, and went on to live there for a while, and then Argentina, and I've just been sort of picking up great kind of Cuban, Panama, salsa songs ever since, really.
Okay, what's the name of this track? What are we going to listen to?
So this is called Moving Grooving, and it's called it's by Little Francisco Greaves, and it's off a Panama album.
Excellent.
Joy 94.9.
You've been grooving all night. Come on! Snap it out, man! Come on, let all of them, baby, baby, just not go.
nothing gets us excited like Detours on Joy 94.9.
It's 18 minutes past 12. You're on Joy 94.9, listening to Detours. This is Mark. Greg's away at the hairdresser today. And we have the lovely Matt here on the panel. We also have Lucy here, Lucy Holdsworth, talking about many different things. She's a very well-travelled person, and she's got interesting media experience. And that track that we just listened to was Moving Grooving by Little Francisco Greaves. So how did you get onto that music? You were working in Mexico teaching survival skills.
I was teaching there was a bit of that actually,
extra jungle.
So I was teaching English and doing some community development work and living in a little hut by the beach.
So you're doing it Bear Grylls style?
It was a little bit, yeah.
So what part of Mexico was that, and how did you get into that? That's the fascinating thing, because I want the listeners to know that they can email us at onair@joy.org.au or SMS in 0427 Joy 949 and ask questions about how to do things that Lucy's been involved in. So you were doing this as a volunteer?
Yes, exactly. I researched organisations that you could go away with, and I also wanted to always build on the resume, learn new skills. So I wanted to get my teaching English as a foreign language qualification.
Right.
So I found Global Vision International, and I went with them to Mexico, and I was only supposed to go for 5 weeks, I think, and I ended up there for 6 months because I loved it.
Wow. Yeah. So by volunteering, you got the opportunity to go to Mexico, to go into a place, get under the skin of the country. What was the highlighting experiences? What were the things you cherished the most from that?
I fell in love with absolutely every aspect to Mexico. It still has a big place in my heart, to the point where I can't really think about it for too long without getting a bit sad that I'm not there. It really, wow. I've been quite fortunate to have travelled a lot of the world, and I've never been somewhere that's had quite such an effect. The people and the language and the food and the music and the culture and everything's very exciting.
So what did you learn or experience about the people in particular?
I learned that they're a fiery, passionate bunch, which is...
How do you mean? Do they set fire to things or...?
Less arson, more love.
Oh, good. That's the good fire.
Yeah. I had a Mexican boyfriend. He was...
Tell us about that.
So I can't say anything too deflammatory, bless him. They're a passionate bunch. It's all go the whole time. I'm from England. I like tea. I like just a calm, quiet, subdued life, but there was none of that in Mexico.
And queuing.
Yeah, I love a queue. Know where you are in a queue.
Do they queue much where you were in Mexico?
No. Don't think the word exists.
Okay, so through this program that you went, there were plenty of other people. There were some high-profile people that you were talking about before who have done similar things.
Yes, there were. So I went on from Mexico to live in Bermuda and Argentina and Spain and lots of exciting places. But the organization Global Vision International that I went to Mexico with then gave me a job in Australia. So that's how I came to Melbourne, as their outreach manager. And so I got the likes of Ruby Rose to go on one of our projects. She went to
Laos.
Yep. She did some work with some monks there. She taught some English as well. So if you go with an organization like GVI, you can pretty much go anywhere in the world that particularly interests you. You can do environmental work. You can do community development. You can learn how to teach. Work with animals. The world's your oyster, really.
Wow. So aside from GVI, who you did some work with and who introduced you to Melbourne, there are some other travelling-related organisations that you're involved with. Tell us about some of those.
Yeah, okay. So World Bicycle, I'd really like to touch on. They are an amazing couple. He's Aussie and she's Canadian, and they are cycling around the world, filming their adventures. It's like 30,000 kilometres and they're doing it in a year.
And you've got the website for that people can go to.
I do. That's on the Facebook. It's worldbicycle.info, and they're filming their adventure, and it's incredibly strenuous, obviously, to cycle around the world, up and down mountains, etc.
I hear the world's a big place.
Apparently so, yeah.
SBS told me that.
Yeah, right.
7 billion stories and counting.
And so that's what they're doing. They're filming it and they're trying to make an educational platform so that schools and kids around the world can tune in and speak to each other and try and solve some of the world's environmental and social challenges, really.
So I know that you're involved with them to a degree. How do they do that as they're going around? I mean, I'm assuming they're partially self-funded, and as they go around, they work with people. So education would be a big part of what they're doing.
Yeah.
They can't carry a huge amount on those bikes apart from themselves.
Absolutely. Nick has a camera, and he's kind of the techie one out of the two of them. And I mean, this initiative has been backed by the United Nations. So funding is an issue, but when I was with them, I was brought in to film the section, the story of the shoe. So they're asking questions of where the things we buy come from.
Tell us more about this. This is fascinating. Mm. You want to SMS Joy Melbourne and ask more questions on Detours at the moment of Lucy Holdsworth. Tell us about the story of the shoe.
Yeah, well, we were just interested kind of how the death of craftsmanship is seemed to sadly be coming about, and how shops on high streets, it's all quite generic now, and there's not like, you don't go to one country for a certain thing. Everything's mass produced, and we as consumers are very interested in just buying the cheapest, understandably. But as a result of that, we're not knowing where the things we're buying are coming from, and the work that was involved in going into them, and how much people are getting paid to make them, and giving very little care and thought into it, and discarding them, and so landfills piling up. And so we just wanted to ask where the things we buy come from, trace the stories of this and get some interest into it. But it's all very positive. It's not designed to make anyone feel bad. It's just asking questions.
So tell us a little bit more about the filming of the story of the shoe.
Yeah.
Where were you?
I did the section in Italy. And
And that's a country full of people that like their shoes.
Yeah, they do love their shoes.
They make great shoes.
They do. But so, amazingly, the more that we investigated this, there was less craftsmanship, as I say, and there was more mass production, even in Italy. So we went around and we were asking people on high streets, because I think again, it's price. We're interested in big labels and how much and what deals and sales we can get. So we were asking questions for people on high streets, you know, how important is it to you that what you're buying is made in Italy? And no one really cared.
Yeah, but what's happening to the Italian craftsperson?
So they're kind of going under, very sadly. That was one of the conclusions we were coming to. We asked a few people that had been laboriously tailoring clothes and shoes all of their lives, and it really is a dying trade.
What about young people going into the crafts and learning how to make shoes? Are there many young Italians going into that?
Or no,
are people
not
dying
at all.
Out?
I mean, I'm sure that there still are, but the majority of people that we asked of all ages, it wasn't important to them that what they were buying was made in Italy, that, you know, how much time and effort and love went into the garment that they were wearing. They were just more interested in either the label or the price.
How can people see the story of the shoe?
So the section that I have worked on, the story of the shoe, is in editing at the moment, but they've travelled around West Africa, so that unit's underway. They've also done a Central Asia unit where they've been cycling through the Kyrgyzstan mountains and talking to...
Wow.
Yeah, I mean...
Wow.
It's an incredible, incredible project. So do go to their site, worldbicycle.info, and you'll have lots of different videos on there that you can see what they've been getting up to and a bit of the stuff I worked on as well.
Thanks, Lucy. It's 26 minutes past 12. Stay with us, Joy 94.9. I've been around
the world. Hi, we're Aqua. We've been around the world and nothing gets us excited like Detours on Joy 94.9.
Most amazing gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon. It's 29 minutes past 12. You're on Joy 94.9, listening to Detours with Mark and Greg. He's not here with us today, but he's thinking of everybody. We have a special guest today. Her name is Lucy Holdsworth. She's done a lot of travel around the world, and she's about to tell us more about some of her South American experiences. And then we're going to go into another song, which is another Latin American number that she's going to talk about because I can't pronounce it. Lucy, take it away.
Okay, so it's a song called Llorarás, which means you'll cry. Told you they love a bit of passion. And it's by Baby Caster con las juveniles, which means Baby Caster with the juveniles.
What kind of juveniles? Delinquents?
It's his band. Just let him do it.
Oh, right. Yeah. Good on him. Let's listen to the maracas. Yeah, okay.
Joy 94.9. Get more of the fresh new sounds from around the world. Joy 94.9.
It's 27 minutes to one. You're on Joy 94.9, listening to Detours with Mark. Greg's not here today, but we do have Lucy, the lovely Lucy. And we have a question from a listener. We have the lovely Jody, who regular listeners would remember for the last 16 years of being on Detours. Jody has emailed in and asked Lucy, what are the top tips about keeping your travel documents safe when you travel? Thank you, Jody. That's a really good question. Mm. And that was something you were discussing earlier, Lucy. What would you say to Jody?
Well, I think basically common sense. I know there are different perspectives on it. Some people think that if you deliberately look too cautious, then you're going to attract trouble to yourself, and to try and look as least like a tourist as possible. But clearly that's not always possible. I stuck out like a sore thumb when I lived in Argentina and Mexico.
Do you speak Spanish?
I do, yes.
So that's helpful at least. And you understand the culture, which helps.
Yes.
Did you wear a fanny pack? And
no. That's always been my motto in life, avoid the fanny pack. I don't know. I've done a fair bit of backpacking, but then I've also lived in places. So I try not to take everything around with me, but when I was in Mexico, I'm not quite sure if it's the law, but you're certainly supposed to carry a copy of your passport everywhere in case you get in trouble. And mm-hmm. I have had quite a bit of stuff stolen over the years and spent.
How?
I was in my apartment in Mexico, and I had the front door open to try and get some breeze, and it was on the sixth or the seventh floor, so I didn't imagine anyone could scale, but they could. And so I came out of the shower and handbag was gone. And then quite surreally, all of my fellow teachers in Mexico, for some reason, the running joke was Lucy Holdsworth. Like you had to say both of my names. It sounded more authoritative or something. And the next thing I know, I can hear somebody in a thick Spanish accent shouting out Lucy Holdsworth. So I run to the balcony and look over the side, and there's a Mexican policeman with a young thug in an arm lock shouting out my name that he's reading from my driver's license, from my wallet, from my bag that this guy has just scaled the walls for.
How exciting.
It was quite exciting, but it wasn't.
It's better than the bill.
Oh, I know. I told them everything.
Real
I know.
Crime. So the perpetrator was apprehended.
He was, but it wasn't as simple as all that trying to get it back, because then there's a fair amount of corruption involved. So even though there was my photo on the driver's license, that wasn't enough apparently to prove that it was my bag, and quite a bit of money had to change hands in order to get it back.
Okay, so on this subject, and I'm really glad Jody brought this up, because we were talking before about some of the other security issues or the other things you had to be very conscientious of when you're writing stories. You weren't a gotcha journalist. You weren't coming in from Fox News to tell stories about the country and the government.
Yeah.
But still there are sensitivities, particularly in some of the emerging countries, about what gets said about people, how it gets said, the content, the tone.
Yeah.
What were the things that you needed to be really mindful of while you were a guest in these countries, you were a foreign national, and you were writing and talking about them? What were the sensitivities? I'm assuming you were writing for English language media, or were you doing Spanish?
Yeah, no, English language media. A couple of things, like I was covering a soccer game when I was living in Argentina, but they wouldn't. Violence is so prevalent at soccer games there that you're not even allowed to take a pen in. That could be used as a weapon.
Oh, right. So you can't take a shiv to the game. Goodness.
Yes. So that was quite strict. So, you just have to adapt. Really.
So what can you take into a game then?
Not
do they make, take your shoelaces
much.
Off and your belt?
They didn't take my shoelaces out. I can't remember what I had on my feet. But I wasn't allowed to take any water in. I don't know what they imagined I was going to do with some water, but that was definitely taboo.
Throwing the container? Maybe. Or could you buy it on the inside? What could you buy on the inside?
I don't know. The mind boggles, doesn't it? I mean, it can't be like flying on an aeroplane. I'm not going to make Semtex out of it or something. I don't know. But yes, so the strict policies.
Right. But when you're inside the game, what invokes this violence? We know that you've talked about South American passions and the Latin culture is very forthcoming with its emotion and expressive.
Yes.
And that's very exciting. And what about alcohol? Is that another element that's added to it? Were people drinking a lot of that amazing Argentine wine? Or are they not drinking? What gets them to fight?
I don't think they needed booze to get infuriated about the opposing side, to be honest.
Straight up passion.
Yeah, I think so.
No passion pop, just the passion.
I'm telling you, really, they're a different bunch to the English. They're very excitable. Well, my having said that, obviously English soccer fans get worked up as well.
Yes, they do froth up at times. It's happened. Okay, so what did you learn from that experience? What was the thing that you really took away from having to be mindful of different things than you would have been? Because the UK is a country very much like Australia where you can have an opinion and you're expected to express your opinion and you're protected by law, you're protected by what the society thinks is the right thing to do. You're very free. So then you go to South America and then you get things...
Well, as infuriating as it is, especially being a woman, and it is quite a machismo, it's a very male-dominated part of the world, Latin America. So that's quite frustrating. You just have to be respectful of their culture, though, even though you don't think there's equality or fairness. You just have to use your common sense. Like, I went to a park one time and I took my T-shirt off to... I had a bikini on, but to do some sun baking, that didn't, well, it did go down particularly well, actually. That was a problem, so there were fast emerged a little crowd surrounding me. So you just have to think everything through.
Okay, so aside from attracting passionate crowds around you, what were the other things? I mean, you touched on about sexism.
Yeah.
Did you find being a woman that you were put at a serious disadvantage in some other countries? We don't have to mention the countries and we don't want to be critical of people or their cultures, but in general, did you find yourself at a significant disadvantage because of your plumbing?
Well, I don't know if it was disadvantageous. Certainly, you are going to attract attention if you're a foreign woman. Mm-hmm. You have different hair colour, skin colour, and eye colour.
And also, you've modelled, but you're a very attractive young woman, so that's you're going to get attention wherever you go.
I guess so. So but that can help. You know, that can get your foot in the door. You just have to, as I say, respect the cultures and understand that things work differently in different parts of the world.
What surprised you the most about the difference between coming from Australia or the UK, which is both very, very similar culturally in most respects, and then going to Latin America? What was the thing that really stood out from a woman's point of view?
Probably that after a certain age, most women are, I'm not going to say most, but it's in some areas. I was living up in the Andes when I was in Argentina, and girls there were having children pretty young. They were getting married, and it was down to the guys to be the breadwinners. So me travelling around and asking people questions and stories, I was strange. I was different to them. They didn't understand how, you know, where were my kids? How could I leave my husband and my family? So it's cultural exchange. You tell them what you're up to and you ask what they do.
Because you exist and live your life outside of their functioning paradigm, how unusual were you? Were you considered
I was very unusual.
As fascinating? Or were you considered a...
Yeah.
Heretic?
obviously Argentina and the UK have fallen out previously. We'll just leave it at that. So
the Falklands were worth it.
Were they? Yes. Las Malvinas, as the Argentinians call them, the islands Malvinas. So when I was doing border control, which I needed to do every 3 months, I'd go over to Chile, Santiago, to sort my visa out. And I would use my Australian passport rather than my British one.
Right.
You just got through quicker and there was less miserable, grumpy faces.
Is there still a lingering distaste for all things British or British people? Or
not what my Argentinian
Margaret Thatcher.
Thatcher's not that popular.
Where is she popular?
No, this is
apart
it
from
is
in
a very
Meryl
valid
Street
point. Yeah, I tried to avoid that. I was pals with Thatcher, and as I say, I'd kind of pump up the Australian link there,
right?
But the Argentinian Prime Minister, she's still quite keen on getting control back of the islands
is
now.
She?
So,
is she rattling sabres?
Yes. Well, I wouldn't go head to head with her. She's quite a force to be reckoned with.
And she wants Las Malvinas back.
She wants them back. Yeah. But honestly, on a one-to-one with all my friends there, we never got into it. I just found it easier to travel on my Australian passport. But
right, okay.
People are very good at taking it face value. If you're nice and polite and ask questions and smile and you know, indulge hospitality, then they don't really mind where you're from.
Well, they pretty much know that you're not Margaret Thatcher. You're not Margaret Thatcher.
I'm not.
Right?
Let's just set that record
glad
straight
that
right
up.
Now.
Okay. We've got some more messages, a lot more questions. We want our listeners to reach us at onair@joy.org.au. We're about to talk about, when we come back, we're going to talk to Lucy about what she's doing with Amnesty International and her filming and how you can get involved. If you've got any questions, send it through. But we are going to give you more information. Lucy will be talking to those points. You're on Detours, Joy 94.9.
You'll never need to miss another show. Check out the Joy podcasts, joy.org.au.
I've been around the world.
We've been around the world and nothing gets us excited like Detours on Joy 94.9.
It's 14 minutes to one. You're listening to Detours on Joy 94.9. We're with the amazing Lucy Holdsworth. Ooh. I'm Mark, and we've got the beautiful Greg, missing and the even more beautiful Matt panelling. I'm glad we've sorted that all
out. Beautiful people we are.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, right? Come down to the quiz tomorrow. We have another question, a really, really good question. Grant has emailed in, "Hi guys, loving the show and hearing about the travels. I'm curious about how you sustain yourself financially as a volunteer." It's a really good question, because then we're going to ask you about what you're doing next.
Sure.
How do people traditionally go about this, apart from the obvious saving your money?
Yeah.
What are the ways to enable if you don't have that ready source of cash?
Sure, absolutely. Well, for me, I wanted to get out of media and I wanted to give something back. And I had investigated joining various different organisations, trying to find work within the Red Cross, etc. And I had come to the conclusion that the best bet would be to start off volunteering and get your foot through the door. And that worked out well for me because I then got a job with Global Vision. But I think the general consensus is to do, if you're freelance like me, you do one for love, one for money. So I volunteer and then I'll do a job that pays. And by that way, then you can pay the bills plus contribute.
So there's no easy way, really.
You're never going to be loaded. But,
no, well, you don't go into it for that.
No.
But unless you have some money saved away and unless you can live frugally, it's going to be a challenge.
Sure. I mean, I was quite fortunate that I had skills like writing where you can take them around the world.
Good point.
So I was working for a magazine, so they paid me for every article, like the one about the football.
Right.
And, you know, it was an adventure extreme sport magazine, so they had me jumping off cliffs and all manner of exciting things and getting paid for it. So, and then okay. I would volunteer teach on my weekends. And,
okay, yeah. So you really looked at yourselves as a seven-day-a-week person. You weren't a 9-to-5 person.
No, not at all. And okay. It's not an easy ride.
Right.
But then when I got my teaching English as a foreign language qualification as well, you can put an advert in the local paper wherever you are in the world. You can teach English. And you can earn quite a bit of that one-on-one.
Okay, so then you can do your volunteer work and then you can do some tutoring. Is that what you're
saying?
Sure,
exactly.
Okay, so that opens up some opportunities. Are there legal requirements or are you doing this all within the visa that you were on?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And I was doing quite a bit of, I did some one-on-one teaching when I lived in Spain and I have a British passport also, so that was part of the EU, so that was fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, I also for some of the off-the-beaten-track places that I have lived and worked and travelled in, you just kind of exchange skills. For example, I was serving food and pouring pints at a hostel in exchange for room, food and board.
Okay.
I ended up cutting hair for people for a bit of extra cash at some stage. I don't advise that, by the way, because I'm terrible at it. But you know, you can make it up as you go along.
Okay, so Grant, the answer is work hard.
Yeah, just be inventive.
Not really. I don't think that's really what you're
after. Be inventive and resourceful.
Okay, I mean, be creative. And yeah. Is it true, we've got another question in from Mark from Melbourne, who said that raising funds is a matter of being creative in a market where people allow. I don't really understand the. I don't think it's a question. I think it's a statement. Is that true that the market allows that? The community you're in is open to you sourcing different ways of making money?
Yeah. I mean, for example, the World Bicycle, the two of them that are cycling around the world that I mentioned earlier, they have had an incredible amount of feedback. Just spending a few weeks with them in Italy, every village and town and city they cycled into, me with the car and all the camera equipment, all their supporters would come out and we were welcomed into people's homes, we were fed. So people were giving back and funding, not so much with money, but with their time and their hospitality. It was incredible. Such an insight into Italian culture, way more than if you do have the cash and you're staying at a hotel.
Well, on the subject of all the supporters coming out of the woodwork, let's talk about what you're doing right now and how Joy listeners can get involved. They can find out how to access you and they can email or SMS in right away on air at joy.org.au or 0427 joy 949. You can SMS in, or you can go to the Facebook page, which you just go to Facebook and search for Detours Joy 94.9. Lucy, tell us what you're doing now and let's get some people involved with you.
Sure. So when I came to Melbourne, I started a meetup group called Melbourne International Volunteers. We now have nearly 400 members. So I was getting different organisations down to give presentations and how we can get involved and volunteer here in Australia as well as abroad. And one of the organisations I got down was Amnesty International Australia. And they have asked me to start a film group for them. So we're going to be screening humanitarian films around Victoria. And this is really a shout out to anybody that wants to help me do this.
So where in Victoria are you going to be going?
Everywhere.
Everywhere?
So, yeah, my plan is to travel to a few music festivals and alternative festivals this summer and do some workshops and screen some docos and get people who are interested in film and human rights involved so that they can then screen the films that we're making and have already made in their local cinemas and theatres so we can bring big messages.
So what skills are you after?
Well, honestly, I don't need that much in the way of skills. Obviously, if you have a passion for making film and you want to get into it and you have a camera, then get in touch and we'll make some films. But if you're just interested, you support Amnesty, or if you're interested in film, or if you're interested in human rights, then also get in touch because I would love your help too. We need to find venues to screen these films and we need to generate some PR in our local newspapers. And the more the merrier to spread some incredible messages, really.
Yeah, let's get some people involved. That's very exciting. And talking about getting involved, here we have Pete Dillon. You're going to be involving us in something delicious for our tummies, filling us up.
Yes, well, I was actually thinking, I know a couple of really incredible wine cellars that would be perfect for the whole 30, 40, 50 people that would be able to screen some of these films.
Wonderful.
A screening venue. And, of course, whilst you're there, you can have a glass of wine.
Oh, good.
Talk to us about wine, Pete Dillon.
Well, today's show pretty much has a very strong wine influence. We are talking about the launch of the Rosé Revolution, which kicks off this week.
We'll take us back. The Rosé Revolution, is this Mal's next adventure?
No. This is all about getting people to understand that rosé shouldn't taste like nasty cordial. It actually is. It should be a nice, dry, savoury wine, which is perfect for summer. It's perfect for a whole bunch of cuisines. It goes really well with Thai food. We tend to sort of think, oh, I'll get a white or a red. But rosé is, it's a revolution. This is, it's now, it's
fashionable.
I think this is the fourth or fifth Rosé Revolution, so it's held every year to encourage people to drink more rosé. So
excellent.
It's one of my favourite times of year.
So cravings at 1 o'clock on Joy 94.9.
Yeah, we're also going to be
talking
about Wine Rules, which is a charity event, pitting a whole bunch of wineries against one another for games of touch football. Finally, we'll talk to someone from All Saints Winery about the Dinner with the Angels at the NGV at the end of November, which raises money for Anglicare.
Dinner with the Angels. That sounds either ominous or fascinating.
Oh, it's fabulous. Best chefs in Melbourne will be there.
Is it?
I'll talk more about it at 1 o'clock. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. I'm going to be listening into Detours, Cravings, sorry, following Detours on Joy 94.9. Lucy, one quick question. Who's the most fascinating person you have met on your travels? Greg, who can't be here today, wants to know.
Oh, I thought I had to say Greg, because he was definitely up there, top five. I have, obviously, I love my friends and family back in the UK, but the people that I have met from these last few years of travelling have just opened my mind, my imagination to the possibilities. I don't know, a cumulative.
Too many
to mention.
Swarthy boyfriend or two?
One or two of them, I suppose. Yeah, go on.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Listen to Joy when you want, where you want, with the Joy app. Download it for free at joy.org.au.
Hi, we're Aqua. We've been around the world and nothing gets us excited like Detours on Joy 94.9.
It's 4 minutes past one. I just got a haircut from that low-flying plane. What's going on? Is Santa in town or something? If you're in the city, watch out, because I think the half of the town is closed down for festivities, festivus time. We've had Lucy Holdsworth. Thank you for joining us today. You've been fascinating. And you've got so many amazing things going on, and you've done so many amazing things. What's in the future for Lucy?
Hopefully some more filmmaking, combining media with humanitarian good deeds, I think.
Excellent. So people can reach out to you at read us the email address. It is on the Detours Facebook page.
So it's filmgroupvic@amnesty.org.au.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thank you, listeners, for listening into Detours today. It's been an absolute thrill to have Lucy Holdsworth with us.
Thank you.
Greg will be back next week, and we've got a very exciting program, but we're not going to tell you anything about it because we want you to listen to Joy 94.9 the whole way. If you're not a member, become a member. If you're not coming to the Joy 94.9 Trivia Extravaganza, reconsider it. Tomorrow at Chapel of Chapel, it's going to be amazing. You're going to be able to meet all of your favourite voices and put them to faces, and it will be a thrill for everybody. Okay, thank you very much. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening to Detours. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.